listening to the Fantasy Movie League podcast, the free fantasy game for Hollywood. Pick 8 movies for your own fantasy cineplex each week, earn points from real weekend box office results. Compete for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com. This is Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016, and it's week one of the new Fantasy Movie League spring season. I'm Pete Johnson, the Fantasy Movie League nerd, and I'm here with Patrick Reardon, the box office guy. And Patrick, Oscar Sunday, and a new Fantasy Movie League champion in KM.
We had the Oscars. We have a new champ. Award season is over. Spring season is starting. Like, it's a pretty big week here at Fantasy Movie League.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff going on. Well, let's first review what happened in that final week of the award season game-wise. So The Revenant was Best Performer. And I wanted to ask you, is it normal for an Oscar movie like that to get a bump the weekend of the awards? I was assuming it would get a bump if it won this upcoming weekend, but that didn't. Well, we'll see if it gets one this upcoming weekend. It seemed to get a good bump this past weekend.
I think it's a little bit of both. I picked it in my column last week for the bonus for that very reason, where people are trying to catch up on the movie with the most nominations, like just trying to cram it in before Sunday night.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of paid off. And I think if you think something is going to win, it gets a little bit of a bump. And then if those movies end up winning, it gets a bump the following week. They missed out on Best Picture, but they still took home like two of the major awards and tacked on cinematography as well. So I think it's going to hold pretty well this week and should get a nice little bump. So I think The Revenant's going to be steady this week.
Okay. Well, Perfect Cinema was one screen of Deadpool, 6 screens of Revenant with the Best Performer bonus that went along with that, and then Ride Along 2 sneaking in there as a low filler. Now, only 49 people played that. That's pretty low, considering we have about 13,000 active users now.
I had the same lineup, but for the fact I put Hail Caesar in my 8th spot instead of Ride Along. But hey, what are you going to do? I still had a pretty good week, but I just missed it by a little bit. Almost had 2 Perfect Cinemas in a row.
Now, the overall standings were razor thin like that, too, because KM defeated Trent by about $32,000 in the overall standings. So it was a pretty exciting finish there towards the end.
If you think of the grand scheme of things, $32,000 is nothing. That can be somebody like buying out a theater for somebody's like birthday party because they didn't want to see it with other people. $32,000 is nothing, but congratulations to KM. That's pretty awesome.
Now, I noticed in Phil's article, we've been remiss here on the podcast without giving much love to
the second half league. We've got a bolstered lineup, yes.
And so Chris603 won the second half league, so congrats on that as well. Now, Trent didn't come away with nothing here because also in Phil's article, there was the all-time earnings table that came out, and Trent is now ahead of M37 on that list.
Like four and a half billion plus, I believe?
Yes, 4.6.
Those are Steven Spielberg kind of numbers. That's very impressive.
Now, you and I are not on that list, and I happen to know because I got an early peek at it. The new stat, though, the Perfect Cinema percentage, I was on that list, and my dismal showing this past week bumped me off of it. Detroit Drive-In leads that, with Trent being second. And what that one is a measure of how close did you get to Perfect Cinema each week. If you remove, I know it's at least the Perfect Cinema bonuses, and it might be also the Best Performer bonus. And so it's a way to, the first table that we just talked about that Phil ran is just in raw dollars. So if you're somebody that joined, say, at the end of the summer season, like our podcast guest this week, you wouldn't show up on that table ever because you don't have enough raw dollars to get there. But this Perfect Cinema percentage number is a better indicator of the overall player base because anybody has a chance to get themselves up on that list just based on how close they are to Perfect Cinema each week.
I was definitely nowhere near this list, but like in going forward with the future, since I've been a longtime player, I'm going to try and work my way back up onto the list.
Now, Phil had a third table on there that is always fun to look at. It's the chatter rankings in terms of number of posts during, in this case, the award season. And Angry Geek took that title for the second season in a row.
These guys are like Maguire, like Angry Geek and M37 are like Maguire and Sosa in 1998. They just keep like one-upping each other, and they're like so much further ahead of everybody else. It's not even funny.
I don't think they're juicing, though.
I don't know. I've heard things.
Oh, well, We could, well, I wish you'd said that beforehand, so I could have asked one of those two for the podcast this week. But
that was totally off limits from an off limits topic for your interview with
all
them.
Right. Well, the fourth thing that Phil had on there, I really loved his column this week. He had a listing of that showed what was the overall ratio of perfect cinemas to cinemas played by season. And I thought this was really interesting. So for the summer season, there were 1.79% of screens played, of lineups played per week, were perfect cinemas. In the fall, that went up to 2.6. And here in the award season, it dropped off a cliff to 0.91%, showing really how difficult the award season was.
We've been saying for weeks like how weird award season has been, and now we have the actual data to back it up.
Well, you know what? One of the weird things for us here on the podcast is I got exactly two perfect cinemas this award season, and one of them is because you suggested it to me. And I think you had one perfect cinema, and it was because I suggested it to you. That is true.
And I missed one this week because I went with Hail Caesar instead of Ride Along, but, you know, would have, could have, should have.
Yeah, that's been really weird. Well, along those lines, our interview subject this week is our two-time leading chatter participant in Fantasy Movie League is Angry Geek. So let's give a listen to that. Well, this week on the podcast, I'm joined by someone who's familiar to anyone who's been active in the chatter. It's our own Angry Geek.
Hey, what's going on?
First, I have to ask you, why so angry? Why not just malcontented or slightly irritated?
Well, a lot of it comes from just geek culture, things that kind of anger and make me mad, anger me and make me mad on a regular basis. And it all kind of really started with the whole discussion of that latest Fantastic Four movie.
Okay.
Where just me and my buddies, we were talking on chat at work when we were kind of not supposed to. And basically we were complaining about how is this movie even happening if it's clearly going to bomb. They're sure. Clearly making all these choices that they shouldn't be. And yeah, we started ranting and ranting and ranting until we got so mad.
Okay. Well, that spilled over into the chatter quite a bit with all kinds of... You might even recall you jokingly threatened to shove me into a locker until you found out that I'm 6'6" tall and go about 250 pounds, and then you kind of backed off of that a little bit.
I do recall that. That's when our dynamic changed. That's where we became Spike and the little dog.
I know.
I don't know the little dog's name, but yeah, that's when we... Yeah.
Now,
good fun.
Now, so it's funny you talked about choices. So, like we talked sort of before I hit the record button, I'll protect some identity things for you. Keep referring to you as Angry Geek, but you're involved, like I am, in youth theater for a living, only you're a little more so. You get involved in actually picking the shows. Do you think picking shows for the youth theater that you're involved with, does that give you any insight as to what's going to resonate with the public or what choices that movie makers make?
I don't know if it really correlates, but it definitely helps when something is a name. Like, we just did Annie, you know, we're the first company to ever do it.
But, yeah, you know, no one ever does that one.
Right, and that's been selling out. Whereas, earlier this year, we tried doing Law & Order Fairy Tale Unit, and I thought that the Law & Order name would carry over, and it didn't as much as I thought it would. So it wasn't the draw that Annie or a Disney Junior production will bring.
I assume that was an original that someone that you're associated with wrote?
No, it was an actual script that
we found. Really?
Like, yeah.
Was that through MTI or was that...
No, Pioneer.
Okay.
They have a fairy tale unit and nursery rhyme unit, and the scripts were okay, but whenever we get an okay script, we always kind of like make fun of the script itself and I allow the kids to be more creative and add their own jokes.
Right.
And one of my students actually filmed commercials that we played between scenes.
Okay.
So we treated it like an actual episode of Law & Order. It was.
I see.
That was fun.
It's clever.
The kids learned a lot, too. It was cool.
So it sounds like educationally that was a great experience, but maybe it didn't resonate quite as much with the box office as some of the named titles that you might have.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we know that from now on we'll probably just stick with like a heavy hitter. Like Beauty and the Beast or something like that, that we know that
sure.
Not only are we going to get performers flocking out to audition, but, you know, their parents are going to really want to see it because it's something they're familiar with.
Well, we certainly see that in Fantasy Movie League with the films as well. Most recently and famously, I was wrong about Deadpool. And that, as something as part of the, it's at least licensing wise, part of the Marvel universe that's associated with X-Men, that did particularly well.
Yes. Yeah, it did. I'm not going to claim that I knew it was going to make $135 million, but people in my league can vouch that I actually had it originally pegged for $100 million weekend.
Really?
Opening week. I really
did. Many people even had that.
Yeah, I changed it. Everybody talked me down from it because in our league, we actually have more discussions as opposed to compete against each other. We kind of work together as a team. I live right next to a train, by the way. That's
yeah,
what
I was about
to
say. Is that Marvel like getting irritated with you and somehow sucking you into a vortex?
I am a DC guy, so I hope not. As you can probably see by my big Superman logo right behind
me. I can see it over Skype, but yeah, not everybody can.
Yeah.
It's a very cool logo. I like it.
But I knew that Deadpool was something that was every geek was super excited about. I knew they were excited that it was rated R, so that they knew it was going to be treated properly. And just the buzz about it has been huge for a long time. And you know, I rarely doubt a superhero movie when it's got positive buzz ahead of time, unlike right. Fantastic Four.
Now, what about for you? So, without sort of giving your candy store away, that's one example of superhero film that might have some high upside to it. What are some other general strategies that you put in play that you think have set you apart from some others?
Well, like I said, a lot of it is the teamwork that I have in my league. We really all discuss things together as opposed to, I'm not sharing this with you because I don't want you to do well. We really do work together. But for the most part, this is kind of my formula that I've never really strayed from, is Monday night, I crunch numbers right away based on my own personal estimates.
Okay.
Then I put that lineup in. Then the estimates are coming up by the pros. I see what they have. And then I kind of tweak my numbers based on that. But basically, I create several lineups. My Monday night, my Wednesday versus pros versus Showbuzz dailies. And the weeks where they've all been the exact same lineup, I've ended up playing that and doing very well.
Okay. Well, Monday, you might recall from Mara's Movie Madnesses, her appearance on this program, she mentioned the Monday as her coma lineup, that in case she goes into a coma later in the week, she always has something set on Monday. So sounds like you take a similar approach with some math crunching as early on Monday as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it doesn't happen till Tuesday with number crunching. So okay, let's say if I'm at the theater and I'm doing a rehearsal, I'm like, all right, everybody, take five really quick, and I'll bring up my phone and I'll just put anything down.
Sure.
Because I'd rather have something and with an educated anything as opposed to just the choice eight times. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah. So, and Mara is actually in that league that I'm talking about. So
Yeah.
A lot of the heavy chatterers we're all in a league together.
Well, now that you said that, let me point out, so we're going to have some stats get released here this week as we're beginning the first week of the spring season. But when we hit this point in the fall season, there were some statistics that came out that showed that by far you had the most posts in the chatter. What do you owe that prolific chatter status to? Where does the passion really come from?
And I'm glad you said the word passion, because Fantasy Movie League has created this community of all these like-minded people that I've been looking for my entire life.
Okay.
Like, people, we always ask each other, you know, what's your geekdom? Some people say comics. Some people say, you know, gaming. And my geekdom really is film. I've just always been a film lover my entire life, ever since I was able to comprehend vocabulary. And it's just having people to talk about this with all day from across the country, I love it. And I'm in sales, so as that phone is ringing while I'm calling somebody, I'm on the chatter.
Right.
So it doesn't take away from my job too much.
I won't tell on you. What was the first movie you remember then? If that bug caught you from an early age, what was the first couple you remember there?
I honestly couldn't tell you. Growing up, we had HBO.
Okay.
And that was the original box where it was a physical dial.
Sure. Yeah, I remember that.
HBO was like channel 15, which was the 12 o'clock spot. on the dial. So as a kid, I knew to just do that, you know, turn it straight upward.
Right. You didn't even know what the numbers were. You just knew 12 o'clock was the channel
right.
you wanted.
Yeah, I learned that, and I would just leave it on all day. And then more importantly, every Saturday night was family movie night at my house. And my dad would always go to Mega Video down the street, rent two movies, and then every set we would all sit down and watch them together. And no matter what it was rated, my parents would allow me to watch it with them. And they would explain to me, you know, that's happening, but you know not to do that, right? And I grew up okay. I've only killed a couple of people, so.
Okay. I have to ask, VHS or beta?
VHS. We never had beta. We had the old VHS thing that was, it was actually two units, and they would come from the top. It would go, yeah, when it would open.
The thing, it would lift it up the top loaders, you mean?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, so I would watch it all day, you know, Fraggle Rock and then movies. And I learned a lot about film and storytelling. And the one thing I tell my students a lot is I learned more from bad movies than I did from good movies.
Sure. Just like you learn more from mistakes than you do from successes if you're observing Absolutely. That in someone else's. Okay. Yeah. So then I have to ask, what's your favorite bad movie then? What have you learned? What movie have you learned the most from is another way to put that.
Oh, to just not do that?
Yes.
That's a good... Nobody's ever asked me that. That's just a good question, nerd. Well, it's not so much bad movies. A bad movie I could think of, but accumulatively, they've turned me into a snob. Like, okay, not that I learned a lot from it, but I'm able to notice it. I think Jurassic World is a terrible movie.
Okay. There's several million people that disagree, but okay.
I know, and I've seen it, but like I just thought it could be so much better. And I'm actually one of those people that will tear apart Inception, and it really bothers my friends when I do that, but I point things out that don't make sense, and I kind of do that to Nolan in general. I had a lot of problems. As much as I love Batman, I actually really didn't like The Dark Knight Rises. I can tear that apart all day and night.
You know, the one that soured me a little bit, I told a story in the chatter this past week. Someone, I forget who it was, and I apologize for not giving due credit here, about best trailer ever. Did you see that thread?
Yeah, that was cool.
And I put in something about how I had a very cool boss, Silicon Valley, I was living in at the time as a software engineer. And 3rd of July, my boss takes everybody to an afternoon showing of Independence Day. And at that showing, they had a trailer for the Star Wars Special Edition, which was the first time in 20 years that had appeared on the big screen. You had to watch it on TV before then, and that was actually part of the trailer.
Yeah.
And then, so when they get towards the end of Independence Day, I don't know if, do you remember the plot of that film, how they ultimately defeated the bad guys, right? Is they gave
them a cold.
They gave them a computer virus, right? It was very Ray Bradbury, but if you're in a, you know, if you're sitting in San Jose with a theater full of computer people who know how networking works, and it's like, come on, really? Like, yeah, that was, if you know anything about how computers work, the plausibility of the ending of what was otherwise a very cool movie was really, really disappointing.
I was going to say, don't ruin Independence Day for me.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert on Independence Day? Really? I owe you
no,
that?
No, I mean, don't like ruin the ending. Like, don't make it a bad movie for me. That thing's sacred to me.
Okay. Let's just say that the networking connectivity alone was appalling. Let's just leave it at that. Okay, well, let me hit you with some of my standard questions here, and we'll get you out of here. So you kind of talked about this a little bit. Is there anything else you want to add to genesis of your screen name?
Well, it's more so that I started going by Angry Geek when my friends and I, you know, after complaining about thing after thing after thing, we started saying, should we just do a podcast and just complain about things all the time, which became Angry Geeks Versus, which is my podcast that I've shouted out to you guys quite a few times.
Plug away. Yeah. So how about origin story? How did you find out about Fantasy Movie League to begin with?
It's the most boring story ever. Like, I seriously wanted to know if a fantasy movie league existed, and I Googled it, and I found you guys, and that was the final week of summer season.
Really? Yeah. I thought you were a longer-term player than that. I'm surprised. No. Man, no, so you were really busy in the chatter then if you joined at the end of summer season.
Yeah. Well, I got the crown of the most active chatterer for fall, pretty much, And I was there from the beginning, but a lot of it was me jumping in the chatter wanting to find out exactly how to play the game.
Right.
Because I didn't understand bonuses at first, and I didn't understand why people were playing The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and the Fantastic Four the week before the final week of the season. And then I figured it out, and I saw how cool everybody was. And I wanted to establish my character, so to speak.
Right.
So I started commenting a lot and throwing glasses all over the place to really kind of make myself
as my trademark. Myself. I still enjoy that when you do that.
Yeah.
Well, that's been something you see. Well, that's something you see new players do all the time. It's, why should I play a movie on more than one screen, and what's the benefit of the bonus system, really? Do you have any other advice for new players aside from some of those things that some other folks have mentioned?
Well, first off, use your compare device, compare.fmlnerd.com. I didn't use it at first because I thought it was too much of an advantage. Then I realized that you weren't doing that. I realized it was just really just an advanced spreadsheet doing the math for you. And a lot of people saw it as people being lazy. And well, I guess it is. I mean, I don't want to – when it gives you the benefit of your numbers, that's exactly what you want. But also, what I really could have benefited from at the beginning was really paying attention to comps.
Right.
Yeah, that's huge. Like, somebody in our league noticed how strikingly similar The Martian was to Gravity performance-wise. And it followed a pretty similar trajectory. And had we known that ahead of time, we would have capitalized on Martian way better.
Yeah, I think it's harder to find the comps, I find, for the opening weekend, but once you get past those first 2 weeks, it seems like it's easier to find the comps for the subsequent weeks. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, especially if you go to boxofficemojo.com, they actually pull comps for you.
Yeah, they do.
They're not the best. Like, it's literally just another animated movie that was released that year. But, yeah, as you start getting the swing of it, and I will admit, having massive movie knowledge helps.
Sure.
Instantly knowing a comp off the top of your head. So if you're a movie buff, this game is clearly for you.
Well, as it should be. Okay, well, let me get you out of here with one more thing. My favorite question to end here with is, if you had one thing to change about Fantasy Movie League, what would it be? There have been folks who've talked about the chatter. There have been folks who talked about mobile apps. What would you change?
Does it have to be one thing?
No, but it has to fit within the length of this segment of the podcast.
Well, I do like the idea of expanding the research vault and making it an actual vault so we can go back in time and seeing how much a movie was priced, how much it did, those kinds of things. I like the idea of Cineplex profiles a little bit more in depth, and obviously the forum. But one thing I would love is to do ranking the top leagues.
Ooh,
'cause
that's different.
We had, I think, about six people in the top 25 for award season. So we were kind of not sure how well we did compared to everybody else, but we were still bragging internally.
I can see coming up with some kind of scoring system, especially now that we're going to debut the new statistic about percentages, which you and I are recording this on Monday, and I haven't checked it out yet if they've put that in, if they've kicked that over when they started the spring season. But there's going to be that new stat. It seems like that might be helpful in trying to judge the quality of an overall league. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, we'd be interested to know.
Cool. Well, hey, Angry Geek, thanks so much for joining me on the program. We'll find you on the chatter as always.
All right, thanks for having me, man.
So I just love that guy's enthusiasm.
And my first observation is the guy's really not that angry. He's actually quite delightful.
Yeah.
So I feel a little bit duped, but you can't be upset because he seems like a hell of a nice guy.
Well,
and second, I'm dying to see a community theater production of Law & Order Fairy Tale Unit.
I'm in and around a lot of youth theater, and I'd never heard of that one. Yeah, that one sounds pretty
That's
pretty
one that
funny.
Hasn't found its way to you?
No, it hasn't, and especially if you get to shoot your own commercials for it.
And I think Angry Geek is clearly going to be a three-time champion and the most chatters submission, so I challenge the rest of the community out there to try and top him. It's going to be tough.
Oh, it's very tough. Nobody's going to catch that guy. And I think he's up to something like 11 or 12 different chatter biographies that he's made up.
like, if you're not familiar with those, he'll do like origin stories of some of the more popular people. Like you had an origin story, which was actually quite compelling. And it, there's a lot of words. It's like a full blown. It's like three of my columns. Like they're pretty extensive.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to write that much fiction at once. I can tell you, he almost got one thing right about me in actuality. So
now but it was. Now I'm going to dive back and take a look at that to see what those things might have been.
Yeah. Well, before we get into the new films for the week, thoughts on the Oscar ceremony itself?
I think I've seen every Oscar ceremony in its entirety since 1990, and I've had a lot of like postmortem discussions on Monday at the office. It's really not that surprising anymore. There's a few moments you liked, a few you didn't, and nobody's ever entirely satisfied. So no huge shockers for me. Like there were a couple of categories that I didn't pick correctly, but for the most part, just because of the way these are, the way the awards are covered now, like there's, it's almost impossible to surprise people.
Now, since you've been working here in Hollywood for a long time, what's the way that you watch them? Are you just sitting on your couch like everybody else, or are you at a party?
I've been to parties before, and it's similar to a Super Bowl party, which I also try to – I either watch by myself or in a very small group. It's like sometimes when you go to a Super Bowl party, there's people who haven't watched a football game the entire season, and all of a sudden they're there. And for the people who actually want to watch the game, it's kind of a pain in the ass. Because they have no idea what's going on. They're watching the commercials. They're interested in the food. Same thing with an Oscar party. You'll have people who have seen maybe like one or two of the movies that have been nominated and haven't seen the rest, where I've seen the bulk of them. I'm actually paying attention. So I watched it on my couch with my girlfriend, and that was that. And it was a nice, peaceful little evening.
Okay, you brought out the Super Bowl party comparison. Yeah, I don't like going to Super Bowl parties for that exact reason, because nobody's actually watching the game, and I want to actually watch the game.
It drives me crazy, so I usually have to put myself in seclusion.
Now, my neighbor this year, who's a lovely man, and we get along with him great, he had a live band at his Super Bowl party this year, and they played through the middle of the third quarter, I want to say. So I don't think they were watching a lot of the game there. But their set did feature an Irish folk version of Fight for Your Right to Party.
Dear God.
And that was interesting to listen to in and of itself.
I thought Law and Order Fairy Tales Unit was going to be the thing I was most interested in this week. You might have just topped that. I'm trying to imagine what that must be like.
Yeah, imagine that on like an acoustic guitar. And yeah, it was creative, I will say.
And if it was a year ago when the Patriots and the Seahawks are actually playing an entertaining Super Bowl game, that would have annoyed me. But in this Broncos like Panthers game, which was a bit of a dud just from a football standpoint,
yeah, it was a bad game.
I probably would have enjoyed the the Gaelic version of the Beastie Boys.
It was clever. What can I say?
I'm not against it.
Now about the Oscars, the award ceremonies themselves. So most of the talk was about the opening monologue, and I think he probably got it just about right, because there seemed like there's enough people who are complaining he didn't go far enough, or that Chris Rock went too far. So that tells you something if you've got that many detractors on both sides.
We talked about this on the pod like a few weeks. Ambulance coming behind me. Like just ignore that.
As long as it's not for you.
I think I'm doing all right here. We mentioned it on the pod a few weeks ago. Hosting the Oscars, maybe the most thankless task in show business. So considering those circumstances, I think Chris Rock like did a really nice balance, and he only has 8 minutes up there to really kind of make an impression. Like I think he kept it going through the night. He did a nice job, but it's an impossible task, and I think he handled it well.
I really liked the Girl Scout cookie bit. I thought that was really clever.
I've worked in offices where like senior executives have come in there with your daughter, and it's basically a shakedown to get you to buy Girl Scout cookies. So he just did it on the biggest scale possible. So again, brilliant.
That was awesome. My daughter didn't do Girl Scout cookies, but I have a couple of nieces who were a big selling team in Colorado Springs, Colorado in the mid-90s. So I've been to my share of cookie booths, so those girls all work hard, and that was good to see them get some recognition. And yeah, it was a total shakedown. I don't necessarily believe that they got, $65,000 worth of cookies? Because that $5 a piece, that's
Maybe somebody was tipping incredibly well.
Yeah, I think there were some really good tips in there, because they handed out a lot of boxes. They didn't hand out 10,000 boxes in that 15-minute segment.
Well, I know the Dolby only like holds about like 3,000 people. If you're only doing like that lower tier, it's like impossible. Right. But, you know, I'm sure they padded the money somehow.
Yeah, somebody dropped a nice check there.
And I was at, and like years ago, I worked at a talent agency for like many of the people who were nominated on Sunday night. And as an assistant, you sit in these long hallways. And I remember one of the executives, one of the agent's daughters, brought. It was a flatbed, like you go into Costco or like, you know, a big box store, full of Girl Scout cookies, just going down this epic hallway. And by the end of it, the flatbed was empty. I think she sold every box. So
wow.
I'm quite familiar with the Girl Scout shakedown.
Well, back in the day, my nieces would rock the Blockbuster video. That was the fix.
Wow, we've really aged ourselves here.
Yeah, we have, definitely. Well, in the interview with Angry Geek, there's reference to top-loading VHS players, so yeah.
I am old enough to remember those as well, like those were the days.
Now, the other one I wanted to give you some props for was you called the Stallone not winning supporting actor when everybody seemed to think that was obvious.
I was making Twitter predictions like all week for the Oscar categories. Like I said, Stallone will win and should win, but I knew in the back of my head it was far from a lock. My worst fears happened there, so I wasn't shocked when they said Mark Rylance's name.
Well, yeah, you said here on this program that you thought there was a good chance he wouldn't win just because he apparently, and this was news to me just as a casual fan, that he's burned a lot of bridges around town with people who necessarily vote.
I've had this feeling. This is now the third time it happened. I remember when Burt Reynolds was up for Boogie Nights, who I was pulling for, but Burt Reynolds pissed off a lot of people in Hollywood and had done a ton of movies that, like, let's just say they weren't Oscar worthy. So even though Burt Reynolds like had a good chance going in, he didn't win it. And you just knew the feeling. It's not just that he lost. You just realized Burt Reynolds is never going to have a chance to win an Oscar ever again. Flash forward to 2006, like Eddie Murphy, same thing. I think Eddie Murphy's burned a ton of bridges. He looked like the favorite going in. And I actually won an Oscar pool that year because I went with Alan Arkin for that award. Everybody else went with Eddie Murphy. But I still kind of wanted to see Murphy win. I had the same feeling this year. It was just kind of a deja vu moment where like I wanted Stallone to win. But as they were like announcing the names, I'm like, oh, I don't think he's going to win now. I have a bad feeling. So I was hoping for him because what are the odds we ever see Sylvester Stallone win an Oscar? I think this is probably the final chance. But
well, one thing my wife pointed out while we were watching it was two of the nominees had the same first name.
I think there probably was a moment where Mark Ruffalo was thinking he heard Mark, then he heard the R syllable, and he was probably about to lean out of his chair. But and I would have been shocked if Mark Ruffalo's name was said, but
yeah, he's solid. Yeah, he'll get another chance.
I feel bad for Sylvester Stallone. He's had an amazing career, and he has like got jillions of dollars. But it would have been nice to see him win. It would have been a great TV moment.
Yeah, it would have. Well, let's turn to our new spring season here. So, industry-wise, is there something different about this time of year now that we're past the Oscars, but it's before the summer season kicks in?
I think with the way the movies are coming out, if it's a spring release, like it's changed a little bit in recent years. It used to be these are the movies the studios don't think are high enough quality to win awards, but they also don't think that they're potentially big enough blockbusters to release in the summer. So it's usually a like let's throw it against the wall and see what sticks. But in recent years, it really is becoming kind of a year-round release cycle. Where like we have big movies coming out in like our spring season. We have Batman versus Superman coming out in March. Like even this week we have an animated movie that I think is going to do like huge business. And like in recent years, the Fast and the Furious movies have opened up in April. Normally those would have been stuck in summer. So I think blockbusters, it's really more of a year-round business now. So it's like, yeah, it's a little bit different. It's not quite the summer season. It's not quite award season, but I think it's becoming bigger.
Well, let's talk about our three new releases here. So first, I've gone back and forth on whether I thought this would have a chance to do well this week in terms of Fantasy Movie League scoring. Tina Fey in Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Tina Fey probably has about a 98% approval rating. Everybody likes her, but that doesn't necessarily translate into guaranteed box office. I had just turned in my column a few minutes ago, and when she's in like broad comedies, your Baby Mama, Sisters, Date Night, they do pretty well. But when she does a movie where it's like more of a serious type of comedy, like Admission or This Is Where I Leave You, which is has just as much comedy or as much drama as comedy, she doesn't do quite as well. I think Whiskey Tango Foxtrot falls a little more to the like the dramedy category. So I don't like. I'd like to see it do well. I have it kind of in that 10 to 12 range right now, but I wouldn't be shocked if it ended up lower than that.
Yeah, I'm similar. So I like her a lot. I mean, she and I are about the same age, and she got the dream job that if you were among those people that raced home on a Saturday night to watch Saturday Night Live and you were my age, you know, a teenager in the 80s, like she got the dream job, right? She was the head writer of the show and did Weekend Update and all that stuff. So I like her from the sense that age-wise we're in the same sort of cohort and she's been successful and done really funny things. The thing that baffles me about this is the – so like our new columnist who does estimates. So Todd Thatcher had his first new article go live. I think it was yesterday now. And he's picking the movie to do about 8-4. And the as we're recording, the proboxoffice.com weekend estimate is up. It's right around the same. Let me pull it up here again.
This is one of those movies where, like, if you told me it's going to end in 8, I'd be fine with it. If you told me it was going to be in low teens, the reviews that have been coming out, I'm sure there'll be more of them by the time this goes live, really mixed, which leads me to believe like it's probably going to be right around that 10 range, but hopefully it can get a little bit higher.
Yeah, so Pro Box Office has it at 8.3. And if you look around, so I started to try to look at, for better or for worse, for comps based on sort of season, right? Box Office Mojo does a nice job of, they break down films into seasons. So right now, this time that we're after March 1st and before we get to Memorial Day, they call the spring season, just like we call it for the movie league itself. And if you look at comedies that are released around the spring season, I mean, you're talking movies like Hot Tub Time Machine, which was in 2,700 theaters and did 14 million. If you get down to like 8 million, you're talking about movies like 21 and Over, Second Best, Exotic Marigold Hotel. Drillbit Taylor is at like 10.3. Like, you're telling me this movie isn't as good as that?
Full confession. I saw Drillbit Taylor. I haven't seen Whiskey like Tango Foxtrot yet. I guarantee you it's better than Drillbit Taylor.
But it might not matter, right? I mean, just because of the way the marketing works. And
yeah, and it's a competitive weekend as well. Like, A, it's just not really lining up. Like, I want to see it do well, but I just don't have a great feeling.
Yeah, I didn't have as – I had a better feeling about it earlier in the week before some of these estimates – or before some of these estimates started falling, and as we're going to see as some of the estimates for Zootopia started to go up. I mean, I like her a lot. I wish this I hoped this would be closer to the Pro Box Office long-range forecast of $13 million. But yeah, if it gets to 10 now, that's probably a victory.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're probably right.
Okay, let's move on to our second one, which is, this might be one of those same movie, different venue, London Has Fallen.
I also just turned in my column a little while ago. I saw Olympus Has Fallen, and I saw White House Down, so I saw both the competing White House in Peril movies. I was struggling to remember like which happened in which movie because they are essentially the same movie. I mean, it was a serviceable action movie, totally forgettable, but I don't think there was that much clamoring for a sequel, so I don't think it's going to quite open up as much as the original film did. It'll do okay. I have it like in the low to mid 20s, but I don't see it going beyond that. Yes. And I've just seen the first wave of reviews. They're understandably pretty bad.
Yeah, so the original came out around the same time of year in 2013, and it opened to $30.3 million.
Which was a surprise, because of the two competing White House movies, this was the lower profile of the two, but they got a three-month jump on White House Down, and it paid off.
The long-range forecast for this was $21 million, and ProBoxOffice.com did not change that with the weekend today. They're sticking to $21 million. My guess is that it's lower because of Zootopia, that there's more competition for just dollars over the overall weekend, even though the audiences are slightly different.
They're different audiences, but I think Zootopia is crossing over a lot more than people expect it, which is not good news for London Has Fallen.
So let's talk about the big release here this week then. So the original long-range forecast from ProBoxOffice.com on this was $56 million, which is right in line with what Big Hero 6 did. It did $56.2 in November of 2014. But coming out today, ProBoxOffice.com is putting it at $71 now.
Which would not shock me. Like, I have it, like, I just wrote, I had it at 65, but I also said I wouldn't be shocked if it goes higher. I have a pretty good feeling about this movie. It feels like it's just much bigger than just a kid's movie. I think it's going to cross over.
Now, the thing here that's interesting about this one to me, again, is if you look at time of release, this is what you said earlier. Has the market changed such that there's kind of, I mean, there's a bigger season in the summer, but maybe fall and spring here are still relatively competitive based on what the series of movies that you just rattled off.
Again, I feel like blockbuster movies are kind of year-round now, and like Walt Disney Animation, they have another movie coming out in November. I believe it's pronounced Moana. It's Hawaiian theme, like The Rock does a voice. That's coming out in November, where Disney usually releases this movie if they don't do it in the summer. And I think they've seen DreamWorks and Fox have a lot of success in this March time frame, like be it, or even Universal, whether it's The Lorax, Monsters vs. Aliens, the Ice Age movie. So a lot of animated films have had success in March, and I think Disney's just trying to get in on that, and I think they're going to do well.
You just unwittingly pushed a nerd button by mentioning Moana, because you know who wrote the music for that, right?
I do not, but why don't you tell me?
Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is about to sweep the Tonys here in a couple of months.
Hamilton hasn't had their Tonys yet?
No. You know what they did was they were in off-Broadway theater fine-tuning the show. They were at the Public Theater, and they chose to stay in the Public Theater past last year's Tony deadline on purpose because he wasn't satisfied with where the show was. So it opened just after the Tony deadline for last year, and it ran all summer and built this huge buzz, and they had like a big DNC fundraiser in the fall that the president saw it with, you know, all the political bigwigs, and I happen to have tickets in March I had to buy back in September in order to get them for March, so I'm super excited to go see that, and the dude is just a genius, and I think a broader set of people are going to get a chance to get exposed to his talent here in the fall when that movie comes out.
Is it possible to bet on the Tonys?
If it is, I'm not clear. You know, in London, you can bet on anything, right?
If I can go to Vegas and bet on the Tonys, I don't know if you're going to get great odds, but like a Hamilton sweep seems like a pretty good way to make some quick cash.
All right, I'm going to look that up for you for next week's show. I'll have an answer for you. I don't have that answer now, but for next week's show,
something
I have
to look
that answer.
Into.
So let me throw – so but time of year we're talking about, right? Meet the Robinsons was a spring Disney animation digital release that only did $25 million. Now, that was not a very good movie, and it certainly
– and I think this is back in 2007.
Yeah, so it's older,
totally,
too.
Disney's totally reconfigured, like, their in-studio, like, animation department. I think – really Tangled, I think, would be the first one in, like, this new regime that you can truly – but for a good comp, like Meet the Robinsons was kind of the old. I think Tangled and Beyond has kind of been the new Disney motto.
Well, but Tangled was in November. It did 48.7. So this is kind of uncharted territory for them to release a movie this big here in March. I'm not saying that's gonna tank it because it's getting great reviews, like you said, and the trailers that I've seen. It certainly is going to cut across adult and kid demographics. It's just interesting that they're trying something new here.
They're trying something new, and I have a pretty good feeling. I think this is going to pay off. I wouldn't be shocked if in future years, like, you see like a big Walt Disney Animation Studios is going to like carve out one of these March weekends like on an ongoing basis.
They could. And so there's three for the company in general. There's three animated releases this year, right? Because doesn't Finding Dory come out during
the summer? There's Walt Disney Animation Studios and Pixar. They're essentially like sister studios. And like we'd mentioned Moana in November and Finding Dory kind of has the summer. So I think they want to stake out this season to really just control the year. And I haven't seen any footage from Moana yet, but if it's like Lin-Manuel Miranda's, like, you know, delivers like he did with Hamilton, they I don't see any circumstances where Finding Dory isn't a giant hit this summer. So I think Disney is going to have just a phenomenal year across the board.
They're going to fill that marketing pipeline that we've talked about.
And they've also got, another Marvel movie and a Star Wars movie coming out in December. So I think Disney stock could be doing pretty well right now.
Yeah, buy Disney stock is the lesson there. All right. Well, I think that's it for this week. Your column's going to go live tomorrow, as is mine. So plenty of reading for Thursday for everybody. And that's it for week one here of the Fantasy Movie League spring season. I can be found on Twitter at NerdGuru. Patrick, I believe you can be found at The Box Office Guy.
Absolutely. And this is the one week of the year everybody starts at zero. So brand new season. So welcome all the new Fantasy Movie League players.
You know what else is a good idea for the new season, Patrick? Is to go get your Fantasy Movie League gear at fantasymovieleagueshop.com so you can show off for your friends.
It's quite stylish.
Now, Angry Geek, you couldn't see, so he and I were on Skype, and I could see him. He was actually wearing a Fantasy Movie League sweatshirt during our interview, so that was awesome.
That is a true fan there.
So you can also find the league on Twitter at @FML_movies, and you can find him on Facebook at Fantasy Movie League as well. Until next week, good luck, everybody. This has been the Fantasy Movie League Podcast. Come join us and play for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com.